Before we jump into things, I would first like to apologize to everybody for my mic quality. I forgot to plug my mic in, so the audio isn't great, but without further ado, here we go.
Welcome in, everybody, to another edition of the Return of the War podcast. Thank you all for listening. As always, myself, Chris Watkins, Frankie Cardicelli sitting across from me digitally. Frankie, this past week, Davion Mitchell and Tyrese Halliburton were on the three-man, Old Man and the Three podcast with J.J. Redick. And Davion was asked if there's any food item that is generally liked by the public that you are sour on. His answer was cheese. Do you have any, I wouldn't call it an allergy, but...
things I just, I'm thinking about.
A personal dislike that is a pretty commonplace food item.
First of all, the cheese thing is crazy.
It's wild. It's wild.
How can you not like cheese?
My mom's the same way, actually, like where she's not lactose intolerant, but like she'll order hamburgers, but like get milkshakes. And I'm like, you gotta pick
a side.
Yeah.
Is it like a texture thing with cheese? I know some, I've heard people cheese don't like
great.
Cheese is cheese. You can have cheese melted. You could have cheese cold and just in a block. String cheese, that's kind of in the middle.
String cheese, yeah.
No food. I'm pretty picky. I don't really eat seafood. Yeah. I don't know if seafood is a thing. Do you like seafood?
I'm allergic to crab and shrimp, so I really can't explore. And like, I haven't done the official like doctor. I think they like give you shots and then like give you like rows of what you're allergic to. I haven't done that. That scares me.
That's a nightmare.
When
I was like 10 or 11, they did, or 12. I was young and they just. It was the day of the Kings Timberwolves game 7, and I was at the doctor's.
Wow.
Yeah, I was at the doctor's like at 4 o'clock. I was 10 though, but it's like on my back, I think, and they just go and then see what are you allergic to? It's really fun.
I don't need my back to be like a swatch. Like that's bad.
Especially when you're allergic to nothing and you do it all for nothing.
I didn't even think about that as a possibility.
Which is exactly what happened. I think it was dry grass. Everyone's allergic to dry grass, but no, the cheese thing is crazy. It's wild. But Davion, I don't know what that's about, man. But we'll have to. At least it wasn't the controversial take that De'Aaron had when he came to Sacramento, which was don't like In-N-Out, which kind of automatically put him on some people's bad side in the Sacramento area. But I'll tell you what put Davion on the good side. Kings fans. Just kind of start with that, I guess. Last night, pretty similar to – last night was a game against Golden State was pretty similar to Friday against Utah. So these games kind of run together. But Davion Mitchell had a pretty different game last night than he did on Friday night. 22 points, which I think his career high before last night was 4 points. So that's kind of an uptick. But – that's pretty much the biggest positive I have from last night.
Last night was a tough one. The first half, I think they played so much better. They just couldn't make shots. That's been the story the past two games is they just – the offense goes cold and gets stagnant, and there's moments where they're just looking for somebody to create offense out of nothing. And it tends to not happen. I think Davion, like you said, had finished with 22 – last night, and he had 17 at the end of the first. Harrison, I think, kind of had a similar story where he had 16 in the first half and then like 8 in the second half or something like that.
Exactly.
It was really a tale of two halves for that Golden State game and that Utah game. They flat out just never hit shots. We're seeing the free throw thing come back and rear its ugly head. I don't have the exact numbers of the team for the season, but I know.
Last night they were 8 of 13, 61%.
And the night before, I think they were 7 of 10 or something like that for 70%.
That's
flat out just not going to cut it.
Yeah, they're 15 and 21, 71%. I mean, they're shooting well below 75%, which even that isn't ideal. I think Utah shot 80% on – Utah from the free throw line went 20 of 23, 87%. Mm-hmm. Last night, Golden State from the free throw line, pulling that up right here. Golden State from the free throw line last night, 20 of 24. These good teams, they knock their free throws down. And I'm not saying the free throws haven't been the complete difference. The Kings lost by double digits last night. They lost by 8 or 9 against Utah. But you see these good teams knocking down free throws. And like you said, it's coming back to the same situation last year. De'Aaron Fox, we'll have to talk about his start in a little bit. His free throws haven't been falling at a better clip than last year. The Kings are a very good team through three quarters. Not very good. They're a good team through three quarters. They've come out and played very well to start off each game this season, all three. And they've taken a lead into the half, I think, in all three games. And I think the third quarter is where things kind of – and it's very similar to last season. I think last season we had all these jokes about the third quarter and how many times the team would blow a lead. And we're seeing it again. It's very
– now it's in the fourth.
Now it's in the fourth, which is even worse.
We're just pushing it later and later. Which is before we would get blown out from Jump Street, you know, maybe by halftime it would be a blowout. And then last year was third quarter. Now we've just like, you know what, let's really get the hurt on. Let's put it in the fourth. And I think you echoed, I think Matt George was the first to point it out, but that the Kings have gotten outscored by 30 in their three regular season fourth quarters. Obviously, that's not going to cut it. You're just not going to win ball games. You can play – I'm not going to say you can play the best defense for three quarters, but you can play all the defense you want for three quarters. If you're not going to show up when it counts, and I think that's been, for me, the biggest tale of why we are 1-2 and not even 2-1. I would say the team probably – they don't deserve to be 2-1, but there's a world where they squeak out one of the Utah or Golden State wins. And it's just, I mean, it's consistency. Like you know, they played amazing in the first half, came out slow in the third, came out dead in the fourth, and they just didn't take advantage of when Steph Curry was off the court the other day.
You're getting beat by Gary Payton Jr.
That's the thing is, like, you look at the Warriors box score and, like, you know, you really can't do this, but I'm going to do it anyway, and I'm going to practice the exercise. You look at the Warriors box score, Gary Payton had 10 points. He was 4 of 6 from the field, 2 of 2 from three. If you make that 4 points, which is what he probably should have, there's 6 less, obviously. Damian Lee, my least favorite Warrior.
He was getting you he were had 11. Very upset.
Get that guy to like 7 points, 6 points if he's really got to. Like, you just need to minimize their impact. I mean, if Steph is only going to have 27 points, that team should struggle to score. Like, you can't allow Wiggins to then drop 20. You can't allow Poole to drop 20. I think Draymond had 12. Like, those are the kind of things where it's like those things add up. And obviously, you're not in the flow of the game. You're not going to be like, hey, Gary Payton has 10 or has 8. We can't allow him to get 12 or else we're losing. Like, but that's just the kind of thing where it's like you're decreasing your chances of winning the more that these guys who don't get buckets are getting buckets. And, you know, it's that's where it's like, if you guys are really a defensive team, like, take advantage of that. I mean, you, me and Matt were sitting next to each other last night's game, and Matt pointed out, like, yeah, like, the Kings need to be winning this. I think it was at the start of the fourth or with about 10 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. They ran out no Steph and no Draymond for, what, 4 or 5 minutes?
It was just the bench.
If I'm not mistaken, the Kings lost that 5 minutes, like, they I think lost they got outscored stretch. Like 19-15 or something like that.
With the Kings had their heavy hitters in, and when you hold Steph Curry to, and when I say hold, I just mostly mean Steph was having an off night. Not no pun intended to Davion, even though he did do a good job defensively for the most part. And Steph, if Steph's going 9 of 23 and 4 of 15, which is 26% from three, you need to win that game. And when Clay's not playing, they're missing Wiseman, Iguodala's out. I mean, there's all these different factors, and you look back at it, and Damian Lee was picking up big shots late. Gary Payton had a nice stretch in the third quarter. Draymond Green, like you said, 14 points on 50% shooting. That's the difference right there, and not picking up stops when you need it. And that's the biggest thing for the Kings was there were just so many breakdowns. Offensively, too, or how many times were we sitting there saying, what's the plan here?
I said that maybe like 15 times yesterday especially like when it gets down to like 10 seconds in the shot clock, it's just, what's the plan, guys? Like, somebody's got to have a plan to get open, and setting a screen and hoping that somebody gets open, one of your two people or a wing gets open off of that. Like, that's not going to work. That's what everybody tries. That's what everyone knows is coming.
And credit to Golden State's zone defense. They did a really good job on zone in the third quarter and into the early fourth. And the Kings didn't really have an answer. Buddy had a very bad night. He wasn't knocking down his shots from the outside. Tyrese was doing a lot of things that were good last night, but his aggressiveness on the offensive end is kind of it hasn't shown up to begin the season. He passed up a lot of open looks on the outside, but it's some credit to Golden State's defense, but the Kings just didn't. They look like a completely different team in the second half. And I have a thing from Tim Maxwell, Sacktown Baby Giraffe. The Kings have led at the half in each of the three games. They've been outscored in the second half in each of the three games. And overall, they're minus 39, which is dead last in the NBA in the second half this season. They're being outscored by 40 points in the second half this season. So not a second half team. We've seen it in every game so far. They almost let the Portland game go. Utah, they were in control for most of that game. Let that one go. Golden State, I won't say they were in control for most of that one, but they were never out of control until the very end of the game. It's a problem. It's a problem, and I don't know if it's going to get better going against Phoenix, but I can't say the Kings are a good team. It's the same thing, though. It's like the same thing as last year. They look good, and then they don't. It's tough to get the temperature check, but yeah,
right now. Yeah, I think they're banking on their physicality shocking teams, and I think that's happening in the first half. But I think what we're seeing is that the Kings really don't have any second adjustment. It's not like they're playing intense deep. They're not even really playing that intense. You know, they're not. I think I looked earlier, and they're like in the low 20s in terms of defensive rating and
23rd
efficiency. Yeah, like they're not shutting anybody down by any stretch of the imagination, but they're definitely trying harder on defense. You see them actually getting back in transition defense and making stops, which is completely foreign to how the team was last year. And it's just not – I mean, I don't know why, but they're not coming out in the second half and really giving them any different looks. They're kind of just like, we are who we are, we do what we do, and we're hoping to beat you tonight. It's frustrating, man. Like, I don't know what else the team needs. You would have thought that a surprise 22 from Davion would have been enough to jolt the offense, but I don't know. I don't really want to – I don't really believe this take at all, actually. I don't think this is the answer by any stretch of the imagination, but isn't it kind of like, don't you have to consider maybe easing Marvin Bagley into the rotation at this point? I mean, I don't want to spend too much time on Tristan Thompson, who I think is getting like under 10 minutes a game at this, or somewhere near 10 minutes a game at this point, but his minutes are bad. Like, regardless of if he's having any sort, you know, whether he's bringing a toughness or he's filling in minutes or whatever, his minutes have been very replaceable. Like, especially, I mean, his offensive possession last night where he literally took like 15 seconds off the shot clock and threw up a half hook that he missed. At that point, he didn't need to see the floor again yesterday, but I've not been impressed at all in what I've seen from Tristan in his three games so far this season. Like, it's been nothing that's been like, A, that's stood out, and B, that's made me feel like we can't get that kind of production from someone else.
It was very strange because he played a big role He played a lot of minutes, I think, against Portland. But in the Utah game, Alex Len took those minutes, and Alex Len played pretty well, I thought. He had 8 points, 4 rebounds, and he made 6 of 8 free throws, which for the Kings, that was the best. That was the best on the team that night, maybe the season, from the free throw line. But I really liked Alex Len's minutes, and Tristan came in that Utah game in the fourth quarter and played a random 4 minute stretch, and it just was very strange. His minutes haven't looked great. I know that the numbers look good in the box score; they look good because he gets 6 points and 7 rebounds and only missed one shot over 16 minutes. That's cool. But like you said, he just looks out of the flow on the offense. And he did force in that one possession. But I think the Kings big men over the years have had a problem with their hands. I Marvin isn't very strong with his hands. Tristan has dropped a lot of balls. I think Willie used to drop a lot of balls that were thrown to him. It's something that I think Tristan isn't – I don't think he'll be out of the rotation anytime soon. I think Luke likes him a lot, and I think they're going to ride it out. But between Marvin and Alex Len, you have two good options on the bench that I think should get more minutes. I think both of them deserve at least a look. And Terrence Davis saw 12 minutes last night. He's looked bad for, I think, every game this season, minus a good stretch against Portland. He has not looked like he did at the end of last season or even in preseason. He had a really strong preseason. But it's – an interesting time for the rotation because I don't think anyone's spot out of all those guys that I just named, Terrence Davis, Marvin Bagley, Alex Len, Tristan Thompson, I don't think that they're all either in or out completely. I think that Luke's still trying to figure that out, which is why against Utah, Mo was out, but you're going to play Marvin just for what, 8-9 minutes. Mm-hmm. He didn't look horrible.
No, but he didn't look good. That's why I said, like, I don't really believe he looked like Marvin. He looked like he literally hasn't gotten any better, any worse. I mean, granted, we saw him for 8 minutes, so he wasn't really able to showcase everything. But I don't know. It's like I said, I don't really believe the take because I think Marvin's core issue, and I think I talked about it a couple weeks ago, is I just think he doesn't want to play his role or even know what his role is when he comes in for these 10 minutes. Like, how can he best impact winning in his short time? I don't think he even knows or understands what it is he needs to do, because I really do think that is the sole reason why Tristan is in, is because Luke's going to put him in. He's not going to, in theory, he's not going to worry about Tristan taking 15 seconds off the shot clock and hoisting up some shot and not worrying about defense. Tristan will at least give effort on both ends, and Marvin is suspect. So I understand why he's hesitant to put him in. But I mean, at this point, I just think the rotation needs some sort of boost, especially with how they've been shooting the past two games. Like, you know, Marvin's obviously going to put his shots up too, and they might not fall. But I just think I think it's clear that we need some form of boost, because the offense gets very, very stagnant at points, and the defense is already bad. It's not like, I shouldn't say that because it could get worse, and we saw how bad it was last year. But I don't think that 8 to 10 minutes, and I could definitely be wrong, because if he's the only big man out there, he'll kill us. But 8 to 10 minutes of Marvin Bagley, I don't think will ruin the game for us defensively, and he might actually do something so productive, so energizing in those 8 minutes that, you know, it's helpful for our victory. And that's definitely a dice roll. You know, I don't think you can roll that dice every single game and hope that he's starting to figure it out. But it's just frustrating. I definitely think the team needs something, because as you stated earlier, like, Tyrese's offensive aggression hasn't been there the past couple games. And we've seen that. We had this same struggle with De'Aaron Fox for 2 to 3 years of his career, where we felt like, hey man, like, the team needs you to score. Like, it's nice that you do all these other things, that you get other people involved, but we need a great player. And
the scoring hasn't been there. The scoring hasn't been there. They scored
for either of them.
They scored 21 points in the fourth against Utah. They got outscored 29-21. And then last night, they scored 19 points in the fourth quarter. They got
outscored. You're talking about as a team, right?
As a team, yeah. The scoring, because that's De'Aaron not having it on a nightly basis the last couple games. Tyrese's offense has not been around, which is fine. He's created in other ways. And then, like you said, Marvin, that's kind of an area where, as much of a question mark as he is, the man can score if you put him in. He will get points somehow, some way. And if the Kings need points, is it something that Luke Walton could do? Does he throw Marvin out there and hope he can create at least for a stretch? But when De'Aaron's not clicking, Tyrese is creating in other ways. Davion Mitchell is having a career night, scoring 22. Harrison Barnes is having an MVP type start, opening of the season, and that's not enough. It's easy to point at why. And De'Aaron Fox, as good as he's been, and as much as we've enjoyed watching him play over the last couple of years, it's been three games, so I'm not going to overreact, but the man needs to get going.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, what he had 12, I think, against Utah. So he started off with 27 against Portland, 12, is that correct? 12 against Utah, and then 17 last night against Golden State.
5 of 19 from the field, 0 of 5 against Utah. Last night was a little bit better, 8 of 16. one of six from three. The 3-point shot is just not there. I know he had a decent year last year with it, and he just seems very he has a green light, obviously. Mm-hmm. He's taking step backs and he's creating his own shot. And it's good to see. It looks good until it goes up, but mm-hmm. I'd like to see them fall. I'm sure he would too, but
yeah, they're not falling. It's just straight up not falling. And
1 of 11 over the last two games from three.
Yeah. And to your point, I mean, last year, De'Aaron Fox, if I'm not mistaken, was a top three fourth quarter scorer. Mm-hmm. And we just, I mean, I don't have the fourth quarter numbers, but I can guarantee you that they're not nearly in any sort of elite category. That's a big part of his game is his speed is, and we saw it a little bit last night against Golden State. He turned it on in the late second half, but he's able to, I mean, yeah, he ended up finishing with 17, and I feel like he had 8 or 9 or so heading into it. So maybe he actually did score 10 or so in the fourth quarter last night. But
the best stretch we saw of him was at the end of the third and into the fourth. And, yeah. But it just was too late. And then it wasn't consistent throughout
the fourth. And we need more. Yeah, we need more. Like I was watching the Laker Grizzly highlights from last night. And I don't want to be that guy, but John Morant's starting to look better than De'Aaron Fox.
That's been the discussion. I had that same thought this morning. And it's been three games, but the biggest discussion in Kingsland regarding De'Aaron Fox is the Fox Morant thing. Rivalry that's becoming a rivalry because people are making it like that.
We're speaking it into existence.
On top point guard lists and top players lists. Morant's like in the top 35, and I think Fox is 42nd, 43rd. I don't know. There's like a slim margin between them, but
I mean, I was always Team Fox, obviously, but
yeah,
I mean, you gotta look at like John Morant. I think he's 2 years younger. If you take De'Aaron's career back 2 years, he's not in the same spot John Morant's at currently. And the biggest thing for me, I mean, the reason why I brought it up, John Morant can shoot now. Like that dude is bona fide. Like Anthony Davis at one point yesterday, he had an ISO on him and he played like at the free throw line like you would against De'Aaron or something. Ja like took a three from two or three steps behind the line and cashed it. And I think he had 4 or 5 threes yesterday. Like, you know, this isn't a Grizzlies podcast or a John Morant podcast, but that dude's a problem. And if, you know, if De'Aaron, I know De'Aaron's not going to look at some younger dude and be like, I want to be him when I grow up. But I think if De'Aaron were to look at Ja and just how aggressive he is, and the bigger point of me bringing this up is his team needs him to be this Ja Morant. Like, regardless of, I think De'Aaron would say, like, that's just not me. That's not my play style. Like, the team needs it to be your play style because clearly we need a dominant force, a dominant presence. And it just makes everybody's life a lot easier if De'Aaron's that center of focus. And, you know, I could see how maybe coming out of that camp, they feel as a team that they can beat people and they want to have Terrence Davis score 12 points and have Tyrese score his 15 and Buddy score his 15 and yada, yada, yada. But I would much rather have De'Aaron Fox score 35, 40 and somebody else get 20 and then everybody else get 10.
Well, like you said, if everyone's going to check their box, De'Aaron has to check that box. He needs, in my eyes, at least 25. At least 25. And that's fair to expect from him after what we've seen over the last season plus. And it kind of has to happen for this team to be successful because right now, no one else is walking through that door at the moment. Ben Simmons isn't walking through that door or any of those other guys that the Kings have been hoping to get. The guys they have are the guys they have. And Buddy last night scoring 0 points for most of the game until the fourth. If he has a Buddy Hield type night, the Kings maybe win that game. But that's basketball. Things don't happen. The same things don't happen every single night. Buddy's not going to score 17 a night. De'Aaron's not going to score 25 a night. HB's probably not going to score 24 points for the entire season. If 30. He does, I hope he does. I hope he does. But and Davion Mitchell, it was great to see that he can score. And in college, we know he was a guy who could put the ball in the basket too. But I don't expect 20 points from him every night. So De'Aaron scoring 12 against Utah and I think 17 last night. I mean, that's 29 over the last two games. We're looking for that each night. mm-hmm. from a guy who was top 10, I think, in scoring last year, or top 15 in scoring last year. The Kings, they still to me need that third big piece, and it's not coming right now. And that third piece right now is going to be that other contributor, the other question mark. I think right now you can pretty much bank on De'Aaron scoring 20 plus a night. I think HB's proved he can give you at least 16 a night. So between Tyrese and Buddy, and the other quite like Terrence Davis or mm-hmm. if Mitchell can run into a big night, it's going to be the question mark every night. Can De'Aaron score 25? Can Harrison score 16, 15? And can someone else give us 15 or 20 or run into an even bigger night, like a 30-point Buddy Hield night? It's just not quite what you get like with Milwaukee or the Lakers or those other good teams where you have your big dudes and they're all going to give you 20 to 25 a night or whatever it is. The Kings, it's a mixed bag. And if De'Aaron's not good, it's even more of a mixed bag. Because if De'Aaron's struggling, someone else has to pick up the slack. And that was Davion Mitchell last night. And I don't know if that's going to happen every night. So it's interesting to watch De'Aaron kind of figure it out. I think he's had a lot of calls that haven't gone his way. That's an easy cop-out, I think. But I think there have been a lot of calls that have not gone his way. It's just between Fox struggling and Buddy struggling last night, it was just too much to overcome. So
I'm not trying to cause controversy here, but
oh boy,
good way to start.
Yep.
Last night was the first time I've ever really like imagined what if we just did the Ben Simmons for De'Aaron straight up swap.
Oh boy, they're not gonna like that one.
I know that I'll be the first person to admit that does not solve the aggression in scoring issue at all. If anything, it exacerbates the issue. We all know Ben Simmons obviously isn't famous for his good shot. Well, I shouldn't say that because he does have good shot selection, but he's very timid to let the ball fly or even put the ball in the hoop. But you just, again, like I just feel like the Kings are missing that spark, that boost of, and I, you know, again, I don't think Ben Simmons is the answer to bring in. He's definitely not an energy guy, but I just think that the Kings need to feel they need somebody that they feel hyper confident in. And, you know, if they need a bucket, if things are going bad, they need someone who's a momentum shifter, who can make plays and who can make the team feel greater than they are. And I think the biggest problem with De'Aaron not being aggressive, not being the superstar that we all hope he is just that, is that the team kind of doesn't, you know, when things are going bad, when the shot clock is winding down, they kind of are like, well, I guess it's got to be me because it's my turn to step up, as opposed to sometimes it's just easy to be like, give Luka the ball because that fool's going to do something crazy and he's going to throw it up and it's probably going to go in. There's
why
something too.
Why are you dropping the Luka bomb?
It was just easy. I could have said James Harden. I'm sorry. That's my fault. That's definitely
just
my fault.
It's not uncalled for. Early in the morning. I haven't. Yeah.
It's like a swear.
It really is. And
I don't know. Again, like I'm not saying that I'm now a proponent of Ben Simmons for De'Aaron Fox.
Well, you thought about it. You at least envisioned it.
It's not. I mean, especially at this point, like Ben Simmons' value just isn't that. But I don't know. Like I don't see Buddy Hield and Marvin Bagley being an acceptable return at this point. But I don't know. It was just a thought. I thought about it. And you know what? That could just be me mentally chastising De'Aaron Fox. Like could just be me being like, bro, like I'm mad at you. Like I'm going to think about the possibility of what if we didn't have you, or what if we subbed you off for a better, quote unquote, better star.
It's tough. I mean, everyone's probably thought about it. At least I know that everyone shuts it down really quick. And I'm not one who wants to trade De'Aaron for Ben Simmons, but you think about it and maybe that's not the move that the Kings make, but yeah, they do need a guy that's a momentum shifter. And right now,
I would say Davion's probably it. Davion's the most momentum shifty guy they have, and it's only defensively.
Or Terrence Davis, if he goes into his streak, he runs. Buddy kind of falls in that category too. The guys that just are boom or bust. And right now it's more bust than booming, but the Kings do need that another, like a catalyst. They need a guy who's going to be able to come in and change the momentum of the game. Mm-hmm. And Tyrese is a guy who possesses that ability 100%. And I think he will get more comfortable in the flow of the offense. And he had a really, he struggled in the opener against Portland. Looked pretty good against Utah, I believe. He played. Yeah, 15 points, 6 assists. I mean, he hit 7 of his 12 shots. And then last night, almost had his first career triple double: 8 points, 7 rebounds, 9 assists. But he's only taking 9-10 shots a game, and I think he can take more than 9-10 shots a game. I think that Luke would echo that sentiment as well, that Tyrese should be able to shoot the ball, and we saw him pass up a lot of open looks last night. And to me, he's the guy that is that catalyst, though. He is the guy that can change the momentum of the game because he can do so many different things on the offensive side and the defensive side.
Yeah, and I think, yes, to your point, yes, absolutely. I would love to see Tyrese get more aggressive. I think he's seeing the floor well, obviously, with his assist numbers. He's starting to fully understand the NBA game and how to create shots for others. I would love to see his own shot creation. He's kind of got a little step-back move that he falls into, and it works pretty well, but I would just like to see him be more aggressive on his open looks. Yeah, like yesterday we saw him pass up 2 or 3 open threes. A big problem I still have with him, and I feel like I've been talking about it since he got here, is he's just not getting all the way to the rim. I've noticed De'Aaron has also done it the past couple games. Last game I chalked it down to Rudy Gobert being in the paint, totally understandable, but you can't just get all the way to the paint and then throw up a floater. Like, that kind of defeats the purpose of penetration. If you're just going to bail out at the last second, people are going to show and then fall back because, I mean, you know, they're going to try and block a floater, whatever. But you need to get all the way to the paint, make everybody collapse. That Tyrese and De'Aaron don't do.
You make an effort. And I'm not going to sit here as
I'd like to see him take more bad shots, essentially, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
If it is what it is, if they miss, whatever. But, you got to try.
And it's tough for me to sit here and say, well, just go in and take the hits and go to the basket. Just go at it.
You saw what happened with Mo.
go at him. But it's something I've noticed since last year, too, that Tyrese, he does kind of bail out when he's driving into the key. You don't see him drive in there and take a bunch of contact and still go try to lay in like we see De'Aaron do. But it might come down to being afraid of getting hit or a previous injury. I think that we've seen players that's happened before. Yeah. Willie Cauley-Stein went up for an alley-oop in traffic and he got hit and he hit his wrist in the rim. And he said to the media after, I don't think I'm going to off the second guess. He's like, I'm going to have to second guess before I dunk from now on. And it's just like dude, you can't say that. Yeah. But Tyrese, he does seem like a guy that should be able to maneuver his way to the basket and have those and one opportunities. But and his floater he's a great floater. It's pretty an impressive aspect of his game. But I would like to see him fake that a little more and go right to the rack because I think that defenders are catching on to his floater and the fact that he's not driving into the key. He pulls up as soon as he touches that paint. He's either floating it or kicking it out.
I've never seen a man leave the floor so much in my life. Like, he jumps every single time. And I get it because it elicits some sort of reaction or frozen motion from defense, because if somebody's in the air, obviously they're probably going to shoot it, and so you draw attention. But it's just like it also creates a timeline where Tyrese has to make a decision by the time he hits the ground.
It goes against all basketball.
Yeah,
it goes against everything.
Yeah.
Don't jump the pass.
Literally, I can't. Like, every coach tells you, don't pick up your dribble. And
don't jump the pass.
Jumping is like picking up your dribble on steroids. It's like, not only have you picked up your dribble, you have now left Earth and now have until you touch the ground to make a decision on what you're going to do. We haven't seen him get caught in that situation so far this year. I think it happened like once or twice last year.
Yeah, he doesn't turn the ball over.
He makes a good play most of the time. How about that Jokic pass yesterday where he went for the floater and then like turned his hand and pushed it out to the three? I think Mo hit a corner three. Filthy. Like the guy sees the floor, and it's not a matter of like he doesn't. He definitely gets the game and understands the game.
He has the best court vision on the team, I think. Yeah. I know De'Aaron has assist numbers that are kind of different. They're more just the – they're not – I guess flashy maybe isn't the best word, because I mean, well, Kings fans love flashy. We still love Jason Williams after he played here for what, two seasons?
Gosh.
Tyrese has those flashy, impressive looks. And last night, 9 assists, right? 9 assists?
Yeah, 9.
Yeah, six assists, two turnovers against Utah. Last night, 9 assists and 2 turnovers. So the assists to turnover numbers are good. He's not turning the ball over. He's not giving it up. I think last year he had a stretch where he had 70 or 60 assists and 1 or 2 turnovers. The guy just does not turn the ball over that much. But back to my point, he's a guy that if he can create more offense, and last year we saw it, that he can score 15, 16 on a nightly basis if he really wants to. He could be that guy for the Kings that could change the momentum, because he can do so many things. But in order to do that, I think the aggressiveness needs to tick upward, because if he goes into the paint and tries to score more buckets, he's going to get to the free throw line. He's a great free throw shooter. So easier for me to sit here and just say, go in there and just get hammered by NBA centers and go make free throws. But he added the size. Let's see him use it a little more.
Yeah, and I feel the same way about De'Aaron Fox, where it's like, I mean, he's definitely attacking the rim more than Tyrese is, but with the added weight that he's put on, he's very wide-shouldered now, and I would expect him to use those arms and use those shoulders and try and get through people. I think we've seen it. You can tell when De'Aaron is getting aggressive. He'll really attack like a step in from half court. Really start to pick up speed, just take off and attack the rim. And that's the kind of stuff we need. Last night is the 7 turnovers. It wasn't super noticeable. It wasn't like he was throwing the ball all around the court. But again, like, it's just one of those things that stacks up. You know, if he has 2 or 3, okay, like, he's the point guard. He's going to have the ball in his hands. He lost the ball. 7 is unexcusable. I think the Kings – I don't have the numbers of what the final turnover battle was, but there was a point where it was like 17-5 in favor of Golden State in terms of turnovers.
And it ended 19-6. So
point blank period, that's the reason why the Kings lost. Like, you cannot turn the ball over. You cannot have that kind of disparity in turnovers and expect to win a game.
Well, Chris, look at it. The Warriors turned the ball over 7 times. ESPN's the 7, so there's a discrepancy there. But 7 turnovers for Golden State led to 9 Kings points, right? Mm-hmm. Kings turned the ball over 19 times. Golden State scored 29 points off of those 19 turnovers. So, yeah, there's your game right there. There's nothing else you can really – that's the game.
I'm looking at it right now. De'Aaron Fox is averaging 5 turnovers a game. He had 5 in the Portland game, 3 in the Utah game, 7 last night, 15 total, 3 games. You can do the math. Not a math podcast.
But we know it's early, but maybe he could come out against Phoenix and deliver 8 assists and 1 turnover. Hey, I don't think he's going to have 5 turnovers for the season, no. But the point is, every game is an important one. And
stuff. I'm confident De'Aaron's going to turn it around. He'll figure it out. He'll average whatever. It might not be 25, but it might be 23 or 24, whatever. The problem is Harrison Barnes is playing the best basketball of his career right now, and it's just getting wasted. Like, we saw this last year. Harrison played really well the first half of the season. He just can't sustain it. Even if he's able to, like, it's not going to happen for much longer. And for us to waste these opportunities, like I said, we should be at the least 2-1 right now. We could, there is a hypothetical universe where I think we're 3-0. It's definitely not a realistic universe, obviously.
No, I mean, but if they could close games out,
they were in both of those games. And, you know, if we have great performances out of De'Aaron Fox in those two losses, like, we're 3-0, like, we are 3-0, and it's just a completely different conversation. So it's just it's the story of every year: missed opportunities. Like, these things don't matter a lot in the moment, but when you know they're stacking up. The Kings talk about stacking days. They're stacking L's right now, and that's not helpful. Obviously, like, you can't. it happens. I mean, how many times have we just talked about, like, you know, they really let this game slip by? And, you know, there's seasons where they'll finish three games out of the playoff. And or last season's a perfect example. We just ended up losing nine games straight twice. They just stack up. It's not a matter of like, oh, this team is like playing legitimately the worst stretch of basketball I've seen them play. It's just they keep on individual nights stacking these losses. And that's the problem. Now, I wouldn't necessarily say the Kings have played well these first three games, but I mean, I would probably say they played poorly in the Utah game, and they didn't deserve to win any of the games that they lost. That's what I'm saying.
It's so Jekyll and Hyde. They look like a good team through three quarters. The first half, they look like a very good team. They've gone to the half with the lead every time. It fourth quarter, they look like a JV team. It's just every game is important.
It's concerning, especially if this team is going to make the playoffs. Like, that's not a team trait that you would like, is these guys kind of crumble late in games.
It's so early, and I want to just – I keep saying that, but I do understand it's early, and I'm not making excuses. And, again, we're going to see the full body of work at some point. But through three games, it's pretty easy to spot the problems with this team. They fall apart late. I don't know if it's fatigue. I don't know if it's just the opposing teams in Golden State, Portland, Utah. They're just turning it up and – to a different tier at the end of the games and putting a lot of pressure on the Kings they can't handle. Portland almost stole the game from the Kings because of...
Yeah, facts. That's another thing, too, is we could easily be 0-3.
We could easily be 0-3. Same, it goes both ways, right? But playing Phoenix in the next game isn't an ideal situation, but Portland did just 30-piece them, and basketball is a weird game. It doesn't really matter. The Kings beat the Lakers last year, I think, on the road.
We beat Phoenix twice, I think, last year, didn't we? At the beginning of the season, before we split.
Yeah, but before we knew they were the Suns, the Western Conference Finals. At that point, they were. I think they finished below the Kings the season before, and they just got Chris Paul. And I think I kind of took a dump on Phoenix getting Chris Paul, and I just kind of I think I scoffed at it at work at the time. I was like, whatever. Jeez. Like that, whatever. Chris Paul, old man. Yeah, which was a freezing cold take, but there's a schedule coming up for the Kings that I do think they can do
take advantage
with.
Of.
I mean, I think they have New Orleans without Zion coming up. The upcoming slate for the Kings this week: 4-game road trip, Phoenix on Wednesday, New Orleans on Friday, the L Word and the Mavericks on Halloween. That's a spooky, spooky Yikes. Sunday.
Scary.
Scary Sunday. And then Tuesday, the 2nd, they play Utah. So you look at it, Phoenix, New Orleans, Dallas, Utah, back home play New Orleans, and then Charlotte, and then the schedule opens up after that, you could say. I think that the Kings, the quote-unquote rough opening stretch everyone was talking about, I think we can say after tomorrow, that's not really an excuse anymore. If they start the season 1-3, okay, that's fine. But that's not an excuse anymore if the rough opening's over. I know that playing Portland on the road, Utah, the best team in the West at home, and then Golden State with Steph Curry, the hottest player in the NBA right now, isn't an unideal start. Then you go play the defending Western Conference champs. But other teams out there have excuses too. The Pelicans don't have Zion. So
I think the biggest problem with me – or the biggest problem I have with them starting off so slowly is it's the start of the season, and you're never going to have this good of health, this much energy, and this much just positive vibes around the team. Like, if you have this same stretch in the middle of the season, it's really tough to randomly be like, all right, we have a tough stretch. I know we've played 25 games already and we're tired and exhausted and X players hurt and whatever, but we got to get up for these four games. Like, this is the most perfect scenario, like, situation you can go into these games with. Like, you're very well prepared. You're freshly learning these things. You have good feelings about your team. You haven't learned how good or bad you are yet. And it just seems like, I mean, to an extent, they're excited to show this defensive identity, like we've been saying all episode, but it ends up crumbling. and it ends up not being who they really are for four quarters. And I don't know. It's just frustrating. If they're not going to beat these teams in the beginning of the season when the other teams aren't at their best, I just don't see when they will beat these teams. And the problem is they have to play. These are the Western Conference teams. They have to beat these guys, and they aren't. I mean, Portland and Golden State,
they're going to be right there with it. They're in that.
They're all night, all year. I mean,
they're in a tier above the Kings, of course, but mm-hmm. there'll be teams that the Kings are going to have to battle, especially Golden State, if they play three mm-hmm. more times down the stretch. And yeah, the Kings are fully healthy. I mean, knock on wood, they're fully healthy right now. There's not many excuses you can have for the team right now to fall apart late like they have in these three games. And I think a lot of people want to point the finger at Luke Walton, and
he's a problem, but he's not the problem.
He's not the reason why the Kings are blowing these games late. The players out there are not executing, and we're seeing it happen right in front of us. Luke Walton has a lot of things that are not perfect regarding his coaching style and his strategies, but the guys he has out there late, and even when things aren't working, Buddy's having a horrible night, he's putting Davion back out there for defense. Yeah. He's trying to fix and plug these holes that the Kings are having, and the team's just not executing. So it's not all Luke Walton's fault. I think everybody's at fault for the start. And mm-hmm. again, by all means, a 1-2 start is not a bad start. It's the first three games of the season. Plenty of teams are 0-2, 0-3, 1-2. Doesn't matter. You want to look at it in 10, 15 game increments, in my opinion. And I think that even 5 to begin the season, I think starting the season 2-3, I'm happy with that, truthfully. But it's going to take a lot of differences, you know, coming up this week. De'Aaron needs to turn it up a little bit. Tyrese, love to see some more shooting and more offensive aggression from him. Davion, I love that even though he struggled in the first two games, wasn't deterred by that, came out aggressive again last night and kept us in the game. A lot of good things, bad things too, but there's been a lot of good things as well. Mm-hmm. So
let's focus on those good things. Let's go to our award segment. For all those who were listeners to the Return of the Roar last year, me and Frankie like to do this segment to close out every episode where we give out our King of the Week and our Coke Machine of the Week. Obviously Coke Machine for, I don't know how many times I feel like I always say I'm not going to explain this again, but this is actually the last time I'm explaining it. Coke Machine, for all those who don't know, is George Karl once had a famous press conference. I think Derek Williams had like 8 rebounds or something like that. And when asked about Derek Williams's rebounding, George Karl responded, you know, even the Coke Machine can go out there and get a couple rebounds. So in spirit, the Coke Machine is our jester of the week, if you will. It's our guy who's just kind of going out there and
anti-king of the week.
Just because he's playing. Yeah. Just because they're playing, they're doing things. But
we're switching it up this year. If you listen last season, we used to kind of have the same.
Piggyback, yeah.
We'd piggyback. Oh, I'd pick De'Aaron. Oh, I'll pick De'Aaron too. This year we're doing we'll pick a number between 1 and 5 right now, and whoever gets that number will go first. And
you know what we'll do moving forward? Something I've seen on other podcasts that I really like, we'll do trivia. Like, I don't know how I'll not know the answer, but I'll just like look up a trivia question that's like, how many, whatever, like that'll make us look stupid. What is the circumference of Earth or something? And we'll just have to throw out a number and we'll go whoever's closest.
Well, how should we determine who goes first today? Should we think of a random thing and look it up?
I'm thinking of a number between 1 and 17.
but you can just change it. No, yeah, I thought about that too. Just change it. Let's do
how many points per game do you think Harrison Barnes is averaging at this moment? After three games, I would say Harrison Barnes is averaging 27 points a game.
I will say he's averaging 29. Ready? 1, 2, 3.
Let's look. Looking, he is at 28.3. I think Frankie gets it by 0.3. Yes.
Okay. I said
27.
Yeah.
You said 29.
One. Yeah.
Okay. You get your 0.7 away. I'm 1.3. Away.
I get to go first for my King of the Week, and it's funny that you pick Harrison Barnes because he is the easy pick.
Easy.
I'm intrigued to see who you're going to pick now. Harrison Barnes has been playing literally like he's looking at his numbers right now. They're just stupid.
Hall of Fame.
Three games, 28.3 points, 10.3 rebounds, 50% from the field, 55% from the three-point line this season. He has made 15 of his 27 three-point attempts. That leads all of the NBA. 15 yeah. threes over three games, which is just ridiculous. He's had a double-double. I think a career-high 15 rebounds against Utah. He's been the best player on the Kings by far, and he's been in my mind, the second to third best player on the team since he came here. And for all you out there that were, you know, pooing on the Kings giving Harrison Barnes that deal, I guess I'm wondering how everyone's feeling at the moment, because Harrison Barnes, this team last season does not win 31 games without Harrison Barnes. This team this season, the success this team's going to have, Harrison Barnes is going to be a big part of that. Mm-hmm. So HB with an MVP Hall of Fame
start to the season. Yeah, 28-10 is definitely nothing to scoff at. That's DeMarcus Cousins numbers.
ridiculous.
Insanity. Obviously that's the right pick. Harrison's been out of this world. I can't think of the last time the Kings have had like they're not star player. I mean, granted, Harrison's their highest paid player, but I'd obviously say De'Aaron Fox is probably more of the star. And
it's very Rudy Gay, like Rudy Gay esque when Boogie was here. I don't think Rudy Gay ever did ten rebounds like this though.
Yeah,
yeah, he wasn't rebounding, and he would get 5-6 boards a game. But mm-hmm. I'm just meaning that where DeMarcus was a star, De'Aaron is a star. Yeah. Harrison is putting up 25-24 on the side. Rudy Gay would do the same thing with Boogie. Usually would end up with the loss still, which is kind of happening as well. What more could you want from HB? Like realistically, this is unrealistic expectations for him, and he's doing it right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and once again, we ask, can Harrison Barnes be anything else than the Harrison Barnes we expect him to be? And for the second straight year, the answer is yeah, he can be even more solid somehow. Like you think he is as solid as they come, and he just roots himself even harder. And he's like, nah, son, like I am solid. I'm not great, but I'm solid. And that's what he does. I can't pick Harrison, but I will pick somebody else who's solid. Solid as a rock, Davion Mitchell. I'm going to give Davion my player of the week. Obviously the scoring hasn't been there with the exception of the Golden State game. I guess we're technically only talking about the Utah and Golden State game since we recorded after Portland. But Davion's defense has been, I think, Donovan Mitchell, his almost namesake, was the one who coined it. He's as advertised, his defense is, which is crazy because that doesn't seem like much of a compliment, but with how touted Davion's defense was coming in, like you were thinking, like De'Aaron said in the offseason, this is a guy who's going to come in and be a top tier on ball defender. I can honestly say through three games and like maybe, you know, obviously I'm a Kings fan, so I watch a majority of Kings games. I don't watch 70 Laker games a year or whatever, 70 Miami Heat games a year. I can't remember somebody who plays defense the way that Davion Mitchell plays defense. He legitimately played – like, it's always made sense to me in my head. Like, obviously in basketball, it's the most free-flowing game. Offense becomes defense. Defense becomes offense in just a matter of seconds. And, like, it really is one in the same game. Like, if you pay much attention to your offense, paying same kind of attention to defense seems like the kind of thing that should happen. But – as we see, it just doesn't. We have James Harden of offense, but then James Harden couldn't give a rat's ass about defense. Davion attacks defense as if it is his offense. Like, he treats defense like, oh, in the words of Adam Sandler, this is how I win. Like, this is the moment that we've all been waiting for. Like, this is, I have the ball now. Like, this is where I can control things. And it's cool. It's really cool to see somebody who's that focused on defense. And, I mean, it's really pointing out how poor everybody else on the team is defensively because Davion just shines so much. And, you know, I can talk about his defense all day, but his offense, his shot hasn't been falling, but I've been really impressed with the creation. He's so fast. He's so goddamn fast. I did not think he was this fast, especially with the ball. And his step back move is killer. His hesitation is killer. We saw him kill Bielitsa a couple times yesterday. His shot doesn't look terrible. Obviously, it's not falling how you'd want it to, but I think last night was a good example. He hit one or two threes. He's got the ability to hit that off the dribble three, which is interesting and will be helpful for him. But I've just been pretty impressed by what I've seen so far. I mean, he's really – and as we stated earlier, he's the type of dude who's an actual momentum shifter, something the Kings don't have, a dude who can bring energy and can bring – just bring – make a good play out of nothing, make a good play when we need it. And I'm excited to see the moment where it's like the crowd is really, really into it. We need a defensive stop, and Davion comes up with it, because the reaction from Golden 1 Center to Davion's defense has been perfect. Like, normally, Kings crowds have always been really good at noticing the little things, noticing hustle plays, noticing great passes, great pocket finds, and stuff like that. But the way that the Kings crowd treats Davion on defense is something special. Like, it's really, really fun.
Yeah, they definitely have been into it, which has been really fun to be at the G1C for all the things that have been going on. Davion, I kind of knocked on him last week. Last episode, I think I didn't mean to knock on him that much about his offense, but last night was the boom potential. You know, that's like the, I don't want to say best case. I think that realistically you don't want to,
Best case. I don't think he's going to take 16 shots again. I think him and De'Aaron led the team in shots. Like, I don't think that's going
to
happen.
Best case, but we said it before, we don't need him to come in and score the way he did last night, but that doesn't mean he can, because he can. He's able to do it, and we saw it last night, and the defense has been there. There's been highlights of him, plenty of highlights that we've seen on a large scale of the Donovan, other Mitchell. Mm-hmm. The Donovan Mitchell strip from the other night was really fun to watch. I think last night, Steph and Davion kind of went back-to-back, getting each other on a couple things. Steph kind of got him on one. I think one, he shook him, and then Davion came back the next play and poked the ball free. So, been really fun to watch. One thing I wanted to just kind of shout out before we move to the Coke machine. Rashawn Holmes deserves at least a little bit of flowers on this episode. He's had a pretty strong start to the season, all things considered. Been in foul trouble, but 14 and 10, 2.3 blocks per game, and he's shooting 76% from the field. Not to mention he hit his only three-pointer that he took. Deserves a little round of applause.
I haven't been the biggest fan of what Rashawn's done so far this year. I'm just going to agree with Luke Walton. I think he's maybe out of shape or just not. His effort level hasn't really been there. Offensively, he's hitting his push shot still. I am thrilled that he is. You said he's averaging 10 rebounds a game. I'm pretty sure he's gotten double digit rebounds every single game.
Back-to-back double doubles.
That's been way, like, that's so necessary. Like, if Rashawn can do that every night, he can play as many minutes as he wants, and I'll be happy. I just think defensively, like, yeah, you mentioned his block numbers. I just haven't seen, like, his rim protection hasn't been there. I don't think.
Well, he's getting foul trouble.
And honestly, that's an issue, too. And I don't think he's been too aggressive on defense, obviously. But he's not getting caught in the right positions. And I think especially, like, when people do get beat defensively on the perimeter, he hasn't been there. And I don't know. I would like to see more. His effort level has been lacking for me, or his energy level, I should say, maybe not his effort level.
Is he your Coke machine? I mean, I'm just kidding.
No, he is not my Coke machine.
Well, just to get into the Coke machine, I think it's pretty easy. I think this is the first time I've ever given him a Coke machine order. He's gotten one on the show. De'Aaron Fox. He's the one player that you don't want to have to worry about. And we've had to worry about him to open the season. He struggled in each game. Even though he had 27, I think it was 27 in the opener against Portland. I think it was 9-23 that night. He went, 9-22, 2 of 8 from three. The 3-point shot is just not there. 15% on the season. The field goal percentage, 38%. The shots are not falling. Need more out of him. I know we talked about him enough, so I'm just going to say we need more out of him.
Mm-hmm. My Coke Machine of the Week is going to be somebody we talked about briefly, our boy TT, Tristan Thompson. For all the things I kind of said earlier, I mean, he's kind of, for me, been the definition of what the Coke Machine is. He's just been going out there and really, because of his size, because of, I mean, Tristan Thompson is still, let's not forget, he was like the fourth pick in the draft, which is not okay. Like, he should not have been picked that high off of even what he's shown in his career. But like, he's just going out there. He's being a body. He's not really anything athletic. He's not a great rim protector. He's not like a Montrezl Harrell level energy guy. He's just kind of going out there and getting putbacks, and he's honestly being too aggressive offensively. Like, he looks for his push shot a little bit. He looks for it almost as much as like Marvin would, which is kind of, again, I'm kind of like, I would think I would rather see Marvin get those shots than Tristan Thompson. But I really haven't been that impressed with Tristan. I think I expected more energy from him with the clips that we were seeing coming into the season. And I expected like him to be like a real presence out there in some sort. And he's just kind of been a body, and there's nothing wrong with that. Kings need bodies, especially big bodies, but nothing special. And I just feel like he's just the definition for what he's been to me has been, he's been very replaceable. Like, I don't think you can really, I think you can put in any number of big guys from, I mean, the Warriors start Kevon Looney. Like, is Kevon Looney doing anything different than what Tristan Thompson's doing? Not really. Would Chimezie Metu or Damian Jones do anything different than what Tristan Thompson's doing? I think Chimezie would do it differently, but I think Damian Jones would do exactly what Tristan Thompson's doing right now. So
Damian Jones played well last year too.
And that's the thing. Yeah, I'm not saying he played bad, but like, well, for Damian Jones is like what Tristan's doing now. It's, you know,
it hasn't been great from Tristan, and hopefully he can improve on that. I mean, I know, again, 6 points and 7 rebounds last night. That's good. On paper, it looks good, but
make an impact.
It's the other stuff that it's just.
We don't need stats. We need emotional.
We need impact. You're right.
We need emotional leaders.
Yeah, we're not going to be box score like that guy. That one review, which still bothers me. They look at box score
junkies.
It's like, bro, get out of here with that. But yeah, nice road trip coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Three games in the books,
and you know, we haven't really learned much about the team. Hopefully, I mean, I hope this isn't the identity of the team. I don't think it is, because it does seem like it's somewhere in the middle. Like, this team is trying too hard to just be blowing it late like they are. So they're either going to increase the intensity throughout the duration of the game, or they're just going to revert back to let's not show effort at all.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I would like to think that was the reason why they brought in all these veterans. That's the reason you bring in Davion Mitchell, is because these are guys who are not going to back down and who want to win. And I mean, from an organizational standpoint, all signs were pointing to, this is a year that we need wins. And wins have not happened. So, I mean, one win has happened, and you know, I think Carmichael Dave pointed out that the teams that the Kings have played are a combined 6-1. Obviously, the one loss being to the Kings from Portland. But you play who's in front of you, and sometimes you got to beat good teams. And
they're going to have to. Yeah. They're going to have to this week, playing Phoenix on the road. New Orleans, I wouldn't categorize as a good team. They're very Kingsy themselves. And even Dallas is very – I know they've had a kind of struggle to open up the season. Again, on a spooky Sunday, Halloween, as far as us recording again goes,
probably
Saturday or next Monday.
I think it's Saturday or Monday, yeah.
Unless something big happens on Wednesday or Friday, you know. But we're gonna sit back and let the stuff unfold. Let the team.
Would that be a pre-Halloween episode?
We could do a pre-Halloween.
Or post. It'll be either or.
We'll see what happens. If the Kings go, if something great or horrible happens, we could probably tap in on Saturday morning. If we're looking at
just
very mid, kind of like it is right.
Yeah,
and we'll wait till Monday, but hopefully the Kings go 2-0, and Saturday morning we can have a nice little exciting Halloween episode for you guys. But we'll see. That's not up to us. It's up to the boys in purple. So
yep. For Frankie Carticelli, I am Chris Watkins. Frankie, are you going to be? Do you have any Halloween plans? Are you going to dress up as anything?
Yeah, my girlfriend.
That's a big sigh.
Just like big Cher people or big Cher guy. She's going to be Cher, and I'm going to be.
Oh, I thought you were like, oh, I'm sharing. Like, I'm big on sharing. She's going to be Cher.
Yeah, big Cher. Yeah, we're going to share. No, Sonny and Cher.
Ah,
Sonny and Cher. So I'm going to be mustached. I don't really know much about him until I Googled. Anyone out there that's into Sonny and Cher, I'm sorry. I know who Cher is. Then I found out who Sonny is and said, okay. Yeah. So I'm basically just her Cher's boy toy, I guess, or her husband. I guess they're married.
You're sorry, just there for Sonny. The picture.
I'm just there for the picture, and I'm there to wear the wig and the 70s get up and the mustache. So what about you? Yeah.
I don't think I have any plans to go into any Halloween parties. I'm not the biggest fan. My birthday is tomorrow, so I'm not like the biggest Halloween guy. Like, it kind of like intrudes on my birthday a little bit. But
26 years old?
Yeah. Yeah. The big insurance age.
Do you have any big plans for your birthday?
Not get in any accidents because I don't want to test it out. No, probably.
Parents insurance gone.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a tough day. It is a very tough day.
It's tough. It's the day that the government literally stops treating you like a child.
Yep.
Like, officially.
They say 18 is when you become a man or adult woman. It's 26.
No. At 26, you are freely being like the government, like just the world is like, bro.
Yeah, mommy and daddy can't support you at their medical benefits
now.
Anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, all these bills, everything.
You're too old.
Responsibilities are yours.
Like the Kevin Hart, Don Cheadle thing. I'm 26 years old. Damn.
Sorry. No, to answer your question, I don't think so. I've heard rumors that if we do, then we're doing like a Trinity Morpheus kind of thing.
Ooh.
Obviously, I would be Morpheus, but
yes.
I don't think that's confirmed. My roommates were doing like a Mario Kart thing. I don't think they ended up doing that.
Like a Mario Kart party?
Just like Halloween theme. Like, we can all pick somebody from Mario Kart.
I love that. I dress up as Mario for 2 years in a row, and Allie, my girlfriend, she still gives me hell for it. She doesn't like really? She didn't like it. Well, yeah, she's being a hater. She's hating on,
that's
hating on Mario.
Yeah,
it's me, Mario.
It's me, Mario.
Luigi. Yeah, I love that stuff, man.
Yeah.
Bowser, the live-action Mario movie, fire me up.
That's gonna be strange. I don't
it's
know
gonna
who
be Chris like, Pratt playing
yeah,
Mario.
Like,
that's
my
thing
about that movie. Like, is Chris Pratt gonna have like an Italian accent, or is it just gonna be
somehow
like,
that's racist to me? I don't know.
Well, I mean, low key, like Mario's accent already kind of is like, very. I don't know if it's racist, but it's incredibly stereotype driven.
To Italian, to and I'm Italian.
Yeah, he's an Italian plumber, right?
I'll have to ask my family how they feel about the Mario
also,
accent.
Also, like, he really doesn't. Is it an accent even? Like,
I think he's actually. I think he's just Italian.
I think he's just an Italian guy.
There's multiple Italian stereotypes. So there's that, and then there's the like, hey, what
the
are you
sweatsuit?
Doing? Gabagoo. Gabagoo. Ha ha.
This freaking guy.
Freaking gabagoo.
Yeah.
So
Bagel Boss.
I think I dressed up as a when Jersey Shore was a big thing. I think I dressed up like a Guido from Jersey Shore.
My roommates are rewatching Jersey Shore right now. We're on season 4. We're on the episode. Maybe you'll remember this, where Mike knocks himself out with him and Ronnie
in the wall.
Yes, I mean, like, let's get crazy. Bangs his head into the wall, knocks himself out. Like,
how did he not die?
Literally, like NFL concussion level, like. Staring into the stars, and then gets in a fight again and gets slammed.
That show was prime. I'm not a big reality TV guy. My sister loves reality TV, but I found myself I was obsessed when I was 17, 18 watching that show. Man, it was such good TV.
Forgot as well, like the hold that it had on culture, like was insane. Like Beating Up the Beat, Jersey, Cabs Are Here, like Smush Room.
Cabby.
All that stuff was so like ingrained in all of American culture. Like, everybody in America knew, like, Jersey
Ronnie. They can name a Ronnie, Mike, Snooki, J.
Snooki. I will tell my dad Snooki, and he'll have an adverse reaction. Oh, that dude. Thing! Like, Snooki's not even a person.
my parents knew. They knew. Parents knew back. It's just like, yeah. So back,
crazy.
It's still sending waves today. So people out there,
2012 was a wild time.
dressing up like Jersey Shore. I salute you out there,
like Jay Wow.
Yeah. What a time, though.
What a time. Yeah.
Happy Halloween.
That's the type of thing where it's like we were talking about responsibility. I felt no responsibility to Earth at that point. I was like, oh man, like life is great. Like, this is just what life is going to be. You just party and like.
Are you having a quarter life crisis?
A little bit, man. Like, I swear, no one told me that adulting had this much responsibility.
Not grown up. Like, grown up. This is the last bad one, I think. When you lose something, you know, yeah. Now you're an adult now. You just got to take care of stuff, and
it's all downhill from here.
It gets easier. We're sitting here weeping over being in our 20s. All right. On that note, before people want to rip our heads off,
we've just lost everyone over the age of 24. All right. Well, like I said, I was going to wrap it up. But Frankie Cardicelli, Chris Watkins, thank you all for listening, and hopefully the Kings win some games, huh? All right. Yeah. Go Kings.
Keep.